I'm Dave Rubin, this is the Rubin Report, and we've got another Friday roundtable extravaganza for you. Joining me are two first-time guests on the Rubin Report. First up, comedian and musician Ami Kazek, and Israeli political commentator Meira Cowland. Ami, Meira, welcome to the Rubin Report.
Thank you, Dave.
I should say, Ami, this is your first appearance on the Rubin Report as a live guest, although you did make a mini appearance about a week, it was a week ago today, actually, because you were on that video with Candace Owens talking about the Muslim quarter, and you guys got into a little bit. Do you want to give me like a 30-second recap of that thing, and then we'll talk to Mayor and get into all the topics?
Sure. You know, I really approached my conversation with Candace Owens as a conversation. I wasn't there to try to win in some sort of debate. I've learned from people like the Joe Rogans of the world and the Jordan Petersons of the world to really listen to people when you engage with them and to try to take everything in good faith. To her credit, I tweeted her that morning, and within a few hours, she invited me on to have the conversation. And it became pretty clear within our conversation that she really was very unaware about a lot of the things regarding Israel and the history of Israel, the current state of Israel, and it was revealed in that moment that there was something that confused her about it. And I took that as an opportunity to just shed some light on it, and I was very gracious, I think, in when she described that she saw the Muslim quarters and the Jewish quarters and had a misunderstanding over how Muslims and Jews and Christians and other groups coexisted in the old city of Jerusalem. And so, yeah, I felt, you know, compelled to correct that. And then when she tried to draw the connections to segregation in this country, I think it was I took the approach of, from a conservative standpoint, from a conservative perspective, you know, when you look at a surface understanding of something, like if you went to an inner city neighborhood or a black neighborhood in this country, would you then all of a sudden assume systemic racism in the United States by just drawing a strange conclusion from a surface understanding? And I think maybe you shouldn't expect me to make that case from that perspective, but I do think hopefully the conversation between us was cordial and constructive and can help move the needle in a certain way, because ignorance is easier to fix than hate, you know? And I think it's important to try to make those distinctions, even though emotions run high and these are difficult subjects. For someone not to be aware of something or ignorant about something, we all are. I've said a lot of things that I, you know, didn't really understand, you know, in our, we're all kind of guilty of that in some respects. So ignorance is easier to fix and combat than hate.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear you say that. And of course, that's a premise that I go with here when I'm doing this show. And yes, it was not, I'm not bringing it up again to own her, other than it's to show that we can all sometimes not know exactly what we're talking about. And it's good when people can fill in the blanks. Meira, you, although you've never been on the Rubin Report, you are an integral piece of the Rubin Report, because when we went to Israel, you live in Jerusalem, although I think you're in London at the moment, and you were our trusty tour guide, and your family had my entire team over for Shabbat dinner in Jerusalem, which was an absolutely wonderful day, and you showed us around the country and took us all over the place. So I guess I'm mostly just thanking you. But is there anything else you want to say about yourself before we dive in?
I just feel like I'm doing my part to try and share an actually accurate perspective, not just on the news, but also on analysis in a way that isn't going to traumatize people everywhere. So that's kind of what I do. It's not super exciting, but I'm glad to be here and happy to share my perspective on some stuff.
On that note, we will try not to traumatize people for the next half hour. So first, let me get to an ad, and then we'll see if we can make that work. Guys, I want to share something truly exciting. Picture this, an investment opportunity that's been quietly generating substantial income outside the chaos of the stock market. This isn't your typical stock, bond, or option. It's something bigger, something that's been delivering incredible returns. We're stepping into an unprecedented energy bull market akin to the booming 70s, where the demand for oil is skyrocketing. Predictions are in. Brace yourself for much higher oil prices. Global demand is set to hit a staggering 101 million barrels per day, driving prices and royalties to new heights. But here's the game changer: oil and gas royalties. Picture collecting income without the roller coaster ride of drilling, exploration costs, or workforce management. You just sit back and reap the rewards from oil sales. Now, the golden opportunity we're talking about? A Permian Basin royalty stream, the crown jewel of oil reserves. Warren Buffett's wagered a cool $12 billion on this region. And listen to this, while stocks, bonds, and crypto stumbled, this royalty stream soared with a staggering 149% returns in 2022 alone. Quarter revenue growth boasting an astounding 717% and over $42 million in rev over the past year. Consistency is key, right? Well, this royal stream has been serving up monthly dividends and payments without fail since 2000, 276 consecutive months of steady income. So listeners, imagine being part of this success story. Don't let this opportunity slip and step into an investment that's proven lucrative and ready to fuel your financial future. Go to 2024oilboom.com or click the link below and get started today. Okay, guys, let's dive right into it. Obviously, there's no shortage of things to talk about this week. We're mostly going to talk about, of course, the fallout from October 7th in Israel and the reaction kind of around the world. One of the most disappointing things is that we have several members of the Democrat, what I call Hamas caucus here in the United States, who are standing firmly with Hamas. Well, here's Ilhan Omar.
Something fascinating and bizarre in the fact that there are people who seem to be upset that there are rabbis and people, other people of faith, out here asking for ceasefire. And it's bizarre because you would assume that if you are a religious leader, if you are a faith leader, that your number one priority would be to look into your faith, into the teachings of your faith, and to say, I oppose violence.
All right, I'll first off speak for myself, not for you guys. She's absolutely vile and a Hamas apologist. Also, I don't know that these are actual rabbis standing behind her. And for a bunch of people that talk about cultural appropriation all the time, the idea that she would speak for any religious person outside of her religion is slightly ironic. But Meira, you were in Israel during October 7th. You are a religious person yourself and come from a religious family. Your father is an actual rabbi. Could you talk a little bit about her commentary?
Well, I have a lot of things to say about her bizarre commentary, but I guess we'll start with the fact that as somebody who studied Judaism in depth for the last 25 years of my life, I can tell you for a fact that we believe, whilst we do believe in peace, we also truly and totally believe in, as a commandment, in the ability to defend ourselves against any enemy that comes to kill us. If someone's coming to kill you, you kill them first. And that's the basis of, I don't want to say the basis of our religion, but it's a pretty clear and well-known fact. So the lack of education is just totally and completely obvious. I researched this group. There's about 40 of them. So to go ahead and pretend like the rabbis of the world are out there, you know, calling for a ceasefire, which is really a different way of saying allowing Hamas to kill more Israelis, is just, it's just bizarre and it's stupid.
Ami, help me with this one, because the same people who are calling for the river to the sea are calling for a ceasefire. Now, I'm no genius, but something doesn't add up here.
I always find it very curious when Ilhan Omar and members of the squad are incredibly imprecise when condemning violence against Jews and Israelis, but incredibly precise the other way around. You know, mm-hmm. remember, some people did something somewhere, sometime. this is what is happening there and this and that. But now when it comes to condemning Israel, very precise language. That's very curious to me. But what's really, confusing, and it's not shocking if you really examine it politically and ideologically, is that I don't understand why a lot of these people who claim to be morally virtuous and signal that virtue are not calling for the unconditional surrender of Hamas and return of the hostages. That would certainly end this immediate campaign that's mm-hmm. going on. Caring about all the human life that's been lost, let us remember every single person who is no longer with us, who has been killed in this war, was alive on October 4th, 5th, and 6th, Israeli and Palestinian. And quite short memory you have, Ilhan Omar, to say this needs to stop. This idea of ceasefire, this idea for and call for pacifism, is highly immoral in the face of aggression. You have a choice as a community and as a state and as a people in Israel and around the world between self-defense and suicide. And a lot of these people claiming, I think maybe for some people psychologically, the idea of pacifism and ceasefire sounds good, but what you're really saying is that in the face of aggression, you just need to accept it and take it. The real thing that would stop this is the return of the hostages and the unconditional surrender of Hamas. And that would be beneficial to innocent Palestinians and obviously Israel, but none of these people are calling for that, which begs the question, is this about creating a free Palestinian state or about eliminating a Jewish state? And, you know.
Yeah, to that exact point, AOC followed up at that very same rally, and she seems to think there is no military solution, which is why she wants a ceasefire, although I suspect if Israel was losing right now, she would not be calling for a ceasefire. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure that out. Take a look.
Ceasefire means there is no military solution, only a diplomatic and cultural solution. A relational solution. A reckoning with ourselves and our history. That is what ceasefire now means.
I mean, it's just pure drivel. I'm sorry, I have no other way to describe it. There's no military solution. Well, first off, we know that there is the destruction of Hamas, the return of the hostages and borders that are clean, that if they're, you know, ransacked over, obviously you're gonna do what you gotta do. But she thinks there's a diplomatic and cultural solution. Mayor, as someone that lives in Israel, can you talk about not only how no Israelis live in Gaza and haven't lived in Gaza since 2005, but I haven't heard one Israeli since, well, maybe in the last 3 weeks, been like, we got to send some Israelis there. But nobody wants anything to do with the place. But there should be a diplomatic and cultural answer.
Well, I think this is just a very clear example of when somebody from the West thinks that they understand something to no ends, even though they have no real skin in the game. I mean, it's very, very clear. Diplomacy is simple. It's the conversation that leads to peace, right? You have to have two people on the table who are interested in getting to a peaceful solution. Hamas are clear that they're not interested in that, and they're also clear that they're not interested in conversation. If you look at the hostage situation, you'll see they have no interest in talking to us. So somebody coming and spouting idiocy, basically saying something along the lines of, oh, let's just have a conversation about it, is obviously so unaware of the realities of the situation. And to claim that there's no military solution, there is a very simple military solution. The eradication of Hamas, exactly as the IDF is doing right now. And the fact that you stand up there and say such things to an audience is, again, shocking, but we know that.
Ami, there was a military solution to the Nazis, wasn't there?
Mm. Yeah, this is what moral confusion looks like. Remember her rant in Congress? AOC is like, you know, I think that it runs very deep. It's this idea that perhaps on the very far left, when faced with evil, you know, there's this temptation to externalize it. And this happens across the board. No actors are actually involved here. There are no aggressors. There's no behavior on Hamas's part that's accountable for this. And therefore, to do that, all of a sudden war and conflict just come upon humanity like some force that we can't control. It's like, no. If you want peace, you need to eliminate those who don't share your value for peace, who don't desire peace. It's wonderful to say the solution to war is peace, but that is a meaningless expression when you have actors and regimes involved committed to the destruction of one people and act it out. So yeah, we want peace. How do you get peace? You eliminate and fight those people who are violently opposed to it. And this just displays such a, you know, a moral confusion when faced with evil, and a historical ignorance of the five times Israel has offered Palestinian statehood and met with further violence and aggression, and maybe even the last 17 to 20, oh, nearly 20 years of Israel leaving Gaza as an experiment, and look what happens. So, you know, I just, If she really thought it through, or, you know, the real case to be made is if you want to fight for a free Palestinian state, you need to eliminate those who stand in the way of it, which is clearly Hamas. They don't talk about, you know, creating a two-state solution and talk about diplomacy. They talk about committing genocide against Jews worldwide and eliminating the state of Israel. And now we're seeing it unapologetically on the streets. Pro-Hamas rallies, not pro-two-state solutions. And then she has the chutzpah to talk about ceasefires and peace, and without that recognition, it's hard to believe it's not willful, but that's what we're seeing.
Ami, you're really killing it with the that's pretty good, Mayor, all right?
I'm Orthodox, too. I'm holding. You know.
Well, I would say the tragedy within the tragedy brings us to the next video today, because the international response has been bizarre at best. I mean, at the moment, Israel's doing what it's got to do, and it has international backing behind it. But Justin Trudeau, who literally was closing people's bank accounts who were protesting against him in Canada, who is no moral arbiter of anything, here's what he had to say just a few days ago about Israel's actions in Gaza.
The human tragedy that is unfolding in Gaza is heart-wrenching, especially the suffering we see in and around the Al-Shifa Hospital. I have been clear that the price of justice cannot be the continued suffering of all Palestinian civilians. Even wars have rules. All innocent life is equal in worth, Israeli and Palestinian. I urge the government of Israel to exercise maximum restraint. As the world is watching on TV, on social media, we're hearing the testimonies of doctors, family members, survivors, kids who've lost their parents. The world is witnessing this, the killing of women and children, of babies. This has to stop. J'exhorte le gouvernement d'Israël.
He is evil. I don't know how to put it any other way. He is evil. Who the hell does he think he is that he can tell another Western democracy how they should defend their men, women, and children? Mayra, can you talk a little bit about the things that Israel actually has done, like dropping leaflets and things of that nature, and the things that Hamas has done to maximize civilian casualties? Maybe that'll enlighten Justin Trudeau just a little bit.
I mean, if you would like me to talk about it, we're never going to end this show. But I think there's something that's... This is actually a scary trend to talk about, because I think we're going to see more and more of this. People who came out at the beginning being all like, oh, if we support Israel. But then the issue with this is really the fact that he is putting the responsibility on Israel. I mean, Netanyahu responded to this tweet,
we'll get to that in a moment.
But I think that Israel has gone above and beyond. The truth is Israel could have completely blitzed and bombed all of Gaza in the first 3 days, and this whole thing would have been over. We have the military capacity, and yet you could say it's because of the hostages, but I don't think that's true. I think it's also true. I think it's mm-hmm. to do with the fact that we actually value human life, and Hamas does not. And that is the basis of all actions. And the fact that there are people in the West who still are not capable of understanding that the responsibility for every single civilian casualty in this entire war from beginning to end lies with one group and one group only, and that is Hamas. To point the fingers on Israel and to say to them to have restraint, it's not just idiotic, it's pathetic. And I think you need to ask yourself, as a leader of a country, what would you do? What would you do? Like, really, you would hold restraint? More to the fact, I don't see somebody like Justin Trudeau putting his skin in the game and offering for the Gazans to come live in Canada. No, they're just happy to sit and watch by and say, this is what Israel's doing wrong, and this is how Israel should act. He hasn't visited, he hasn't seen, and he just, he's a populist and he drives me insane.
I don't think I have to ask you a question. Just talk about Justin Trudeau.
Sure. I think I know how to get him on Israel's side. All we have to do is tell him that Hamas is not vaccinated.
exactly.
Simple solution. He would turn against them in a second.
Yeah.
And not to throw another impression into it, but I have heard Jordan Peterson describe Justin Trudeau as pure persona. You know? Yeah. He's pure persona. You know, it's like, well... the ball's in your in your court, Trudeau. It didn't take very long for the lip service of being a Western pro-Israel country allied with Israel to completely fall on its face. The condemnation by which, and the tone of his condemnation speaking towards Israel, I think is very consistent with what we've seen from Trudeau, and especially those, in the far left sort of woke culture that we find ourselves in on the political side. To the extent that a country is virtuous and good in the eyes of someone like Trudeau, they are bad. They are accountable. They are responsible. They are responsible for putting the lives and citizens of the enemy combatants who've attacked them above the security of their own. And this is just a pure perversion of morality and justice to signal some kind of virtue that It is more virtuous for the prosperous, strong nation to be villainized and looked at as the ones responsible. The ones who are successful have only become successful at the exploitation of others. It's very consistent ideologically with everything else he believes about whatever you want to say when it comes to the ideas of stuff on the far left. This affects the way they think about world affairs and foreign affairs and war, too. Like, Israel's responsibility as a government is to the security of its citizens and to protect its citizens. And it goes the extra mile to showcase its value for human life. And why is not Justin Trudeau condemning Hamas, who is unapologetically devaluing human life? Where is that condemnation? Where is that call for returning the hostages? Where is that call for their surrender? Where is the call for condemning Hamas for embedding themselves in the civilian population? It's not there, because I think Justin Trudeau views the country that it has the higher standard of living, that has the moral high ground, as inherently bad. This is the inversion that he views the world in.
I would say there's another piece of this, which is that he fears the Islamists on his streets, and he doesn't fear the Jews. And that's actually probably what's happening all across Western Europe, beyond Canada. It's what's happening in London, and it's probably what's happening in France. They don't fear the Jews. The Jews are going to burn down the whole place. No, they're not. But they feel that the other guys are going to burn down. By the way, this other line that he said, when you talk about the ideology connected to this, war has rules. Well, I suppose in some theoretical thing that's kind of true to a certain extent, and that is why Israel sends out leaflets and makes calls and texts people. No other army in the world has ever done this, although I think maybe the U.S. Army did it a little bit in Iraq. But Mayor, I'm pretty sure Hamas, they don't have rules when it comes to this stuff, right?
No, we actually have there's a WhatsApp group in Israel presented by the IDF for Gazans to contact if they are finding that Hamas is putting them in an uncomfortable situation. By uncomfortable situation, I mean not threatening them and threatening to kill them if they try and leave, right? Israel is actively involved in providing so much humanitarian care to the Gazans. I mean, to a point where I think a lot of Israelis would question why. Why we need to go that way? Why we need to go that route? I don't think there's a strong feeling that the Gazans deserve it. And I think we do it because we believe in human life and we believe in sanctifying that, and we genuinely, genuinely care. The fact that the world has managed to twist it is unbelievable. But Hamas have no boundaries. They have no boundaries, and that comes from a completely different perspective of looking at life. I think as a Westerner, it's a hard thing to understand or grasp the concept of somebody genuinely believing that killing a baby and getting support for that is better than a baby staying alive. We can't wrap our head around that, but they believe that, and that's the way they act. And if you're somebody who's continuing to try to understand this conflict from the Western perspective and isn't doing anything to try and understand maybe what a terrorist organization might be thinking, you're not going to understand this conflict whatsoever.
Yeah, that's a great point. I want to read Bibi's response to Justin Trudeau. He tweeted this out. He said, "It is not Israel that is deliberately targeting civilians, but Hamas that beheaded, burned, and massacred civilians in the worst horrors perpetrated on Jews since the Holocaust. While Israel is doing everything to keep civilians out of harm's way, Hamas is doing everything to keep them in harm's way. Israel provides civilians in Gaza humanitarian corridors and safe zones. Hamas prevents them from leaving at gunpoint. It is Hamas, not Israel, that should be held accountable for committing a double war crime, targeting civilians while hiding behind civilians. The forces of civilization must back Israel in defeating Hamas barbarism." Ami, before we jump onto the final topic, do you think that there's also an inherent asymmetry in that Israel is the only country that's ever asked to explain themselves? And perhaps if one day they just decided not to explain themselves anymore, like everybody else, that it actually might behoove them in a weird way?
Yeah, I know. I find that Israel, in a way, is in this abusive relationship with the Western world that condemns them. And to the extent that they cave to it and enable it and try to showcase that they're better in that sense, they only get further punished for it. So yes, I think it's reached this point where after multiple attempts to please the Western mob that condemns them and holds them to an impossible standard, Bibi should just get up there and say, "Anachnu b'milchama, this is what we're going to do." Like, forget it. Like, we have to do what we have to do to defend ourselves, and we cannot fight to defend ourselves while at the same time convincing the rest of the world that we're justified in doing so. If you wake up on October 8th after October 7th and cannot see the civilizational difference here, the moral difference here between Israel and its enemies, then your moral compass is broken and it's on you to fix it. And maybe one day we'll be able to engage in that conversation. But in the meantime, we're at war. We know we have the moral high ground. And if, you know, and watching all the abundance of footage and evidence of what Hamas did on October 7th and celebrating it, and to see people celebrating Holocaust being perpetuated, Holocaust celebration and Holocaust denial in real time, all of these reality collapses going on. You guys go think what you think, judge how you want. It's not going to make a difference either way. We have to defend ourselves.
As an Israeli, I can tell you that there was a lot of anger at this tweet because people are just fed up. We do not need to justify anything. We're going to look inside. Why isn't Netanyahu wasting any time on responding to somebody who obviously does not have our best intentions? It's enough is enough. We don't have to justify anything. We're doing what's right. We're moving forward. And the Western world can either get in line with that or they can bleep.
We dropped a lot of F-bombs on the show this week, so I appreciate you going easy on me on that one. Well, let's shift this to the mainstream media, because, Ami, it's going to make your exact point about constantly trying to rationalize yourself to people who will blame you for everything. The deputy mayor of Jerusalem, her name is Flor Hassan Nahum. I interviewed her in Jerusalem. I was blown away by this woman. Her energy, her passion, her love for the city of Jerusalem was just absolutely incredible. She was on Andrea Mitchell's show on the televised mental institution known as MSNBC. And Andrea Mitchell, who is a Jew and a Hamas apologist, here she is blaming Israel for the rise of anti-Semitism.
You know, Europe is on fire with anti-Israel protests and messaging. The U.S., now we see this counter march today, which is trying to balance it out. But there are problems all across the U.S. as well, and anti-Semitic incidents. Is there a better way for Israel to process this war? Something that the U.S. has been urging quietly and now publicly in terms of using smart bombs, not dumb bombs, smaller munitions.
Andrea, you know, this is a war we didn't ask for. We didn't provoke. We didn't start. It was something we never expected to have 2,500 terrorists come in. And you saw it yourself, hours of torture, innocent babies who were decapitated, women whose, pregnant women whose stomachs were open, babies taken out. Do you know how horrific that was? I don't know of any country that wouldn't want to go and defend its citizens from essentially an existential threat. And not just that, the leaders of Hamas are saying, we're going to do October the 7th again and again and again. So Israel has been put in an impossible situation. Now, Israel has the strength to flatten Gaza, but we're not doing it. We're putting our soldiers, our young men, in harm's way, going door to door, because we're a moral army, because we don't want to kill innocent.
Mayor, is it not as simple to say that if Israel would just use smart bombs instead of dumb bombs, that people would be less against Israel? I mean, she's just extraordinary, this woman. She's just absolutely insane. But actually, you were with me in Jerusalem when I interviewed the deputy mayor. I think you introduced us, actually. She was incredible. She's an unbelievably effective communicator for Israel. I mean, she just reiterated something that you said earlier, actually.
I think there's an interesting misconception that people think that the smarter they are, the more complex they get. And the truth is, The truth is simple. It's not complicated. And Fleur does it in the most unbelievable way. First of all, you know what? If you could create a smart bomb, so to speak, I think she should get off her show, try and invent one, because she'll become a millionaire if she can do that, probably a billionaire. But it's just a ridiculous notion to make. And it just shows the extent and the just unbelievable, again, ignorance that comes to this around this entire conflict. What is even this? Whatever. But I think that Fleur speaks for the Jewish people, for most of us, and definitely for the Israelis. This is not complicated. It is not a complicated situation. Everyone's making it out to be, but it's not. Hamas are responsible for both. Israel is responding morally to every single situation it is put in, to an extent that we're sacrificing our own people to ensure that there is no innocent life left. No innocent life is taken for no reason. Our soldiers are dying in Gaza instead of them just blitzing it. It's what I said before. It's not that I believe in the blitzing of Gaza whatsoever, but it's a possibility, and it wouldn't be a crazy response. I think even this in the past, Pearl Harbor, Hiroshima, right? There's a reality to the fact that when somebody comes in and says, we want to kill as many people as we possibly can, the response to that is to respond with strength and not to respond with weakness. And the fact that we're being requested that time and time again is a joke. And I think that going simple, uncomplicated, reiterating the same messages over and over again, Hamas is responsible. We are trying to do the right thing. Hamas is responsible. We are trying to do the right thing. There is no other option. Come up with a better solution. You can't, is the way to go forward. No justifications needed.
Andrea Mitchell, I've been giving her a hard time because she has been on the wrong side of this for years and years and years. And she thinks, I think, basically, she knows she's a Jew and she's on TV and she kind of thinks if she's anti-Israel that maybe she'll get beheaded a few days later. And that actually might be right. But here she is once again taking a Hamas line and trying to spin it. And Fleur is not having it.
That they have never had incidents of their fuel being co-opted. They deliver it to people they know in the hospitals. These hospitals, the amount of fuel that Israel finally delivered to Al-Shifa was enough for a half hour to an hour of what is needed to generate their equipment. So you have babies dying taken off of incubators.
First of all, UNRWA put up a tweet at some point that their fuel had been stolen by Hamas and then they had to take it down because, of course, they're very much intimidated, these international organizations, and Hamas operatives are very much embedded in these organizations. So everybody, whatever they're saying, you also have to take with a pinch of salt because they're there. And absolutely, but remember that Gaza, even before October 7th, had 4 hours of electricity a day. Why? Because Hamas was sucking all the energy out in order to keep going this terror infrastructure that they had underneath. So the priority of Hamas has never been its people. And we're doing everything we can. We're sending incubators. We've sent fuel. We'll continue to send fuel. We cannot guarantee that fuel is not going to be stolen by Hamas.
We were told by the government that no fuel is going in.
We have images of fuel going in, of soldiers taking in fuel. Our soldiers are constantly in touch with the staff of the hospital, and we have even moving people.
The hospital has said that it's not nearly enough, but let's talk.
They're under intimidation. Underneath them is a whole terror infrastructure.
I can't say the word that I want to call her, so I'm just going to write it on my notes here.
Just write it down a few times. You'll email it to me.
I wrote it down. I'm going to send you this. I'm going to sign it and send it. You'll have a Dave Rubin official document.
Incredible. Put it on my
even desk. At the end there, even at the end there, give, they are giving fuel. There is video evidence of it, but give fuel so their babies don't die while they kill your babies.
Here's the thing, okay? All this information coming from the government, the Hamas government of Gaza is giving you this information. So let me get this straight. A regime that's willing to go into Israel, slaughter 1,400 people, mass rape women, kidnap the elderly, behead babies, they draw the line at lying to the press. Like, that's right. That's what they won't do. Like, we have to presume that everything they tell the press is honest and accurate. The body counts, the things that are happening with fuel. Yeah, let's believe them on that because they would never, ever lie to the press after what they did on October 7th. I mean, it's insane. And just, the basic premise of it all is to put that at the feet of Israel, to put that at the accountability and the responsibility of Israel, to even have to be responsible for that when Israel was the one attacked, to allay no account. She should be sitting there saying, laying the full responsibility of this entire campaign at Hamas that committed an act of unprecedented aggression against Israel. So it's the worst crime since the Holocaust against Israel and celebrated it. And that she's sitting down with somebody and giving them guilt over the suffering of the Palestinians that has been brought on by this act of aggression. I mean, like Meira said, this is not complicated. And there are some things so ridiculous, only people only an intellectual would say them, right? I mean, this idea of just this moral confusion and this desperate need, it's sort of masochistic, like, it's our fault. We have to, there's this instinct to not want to blame the actual people responsible for this.
So I want to show you guys one more clip because for years, everyone has known in Israel and outside of Israel, that Shifa Hospital, that beneath it, that's where Hamas headquarters are. That's where the network of tunnel is. That's likely where the hostages are right now. That's where their command and communication center is, the whole freaking thing. And of course, Andrea Mitchell earlier in the week pretended that wasn't true either. Here's the Pentagon admitting it finally, fully publicly.
We do have information that Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad uses some hospitals in the Gaza Strip, including the Al-Shifa Hospital, as a way to conceal and support their military operations and hold hostages. They have tunnels underneath these hospitals. And so Hamas and PIJ members operate a command and control node from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. They have weapons stored there and are prepared to respond to an Israeli military operation against the facility. So this is, I'm just telling you what we as the intelligence community assesses is happening in Gaza City, how Hamas is using these hospitals to operate. But absolutely, we do not want to see a firefight in a hospital where there are innocent civilians.
Mayor, there's a really bizarre moment there. So they admit something that basically everybody has known, and then she's like, oh, and Hamas is ready to defend it. Like, really? Are you guys talking to Hamas about what they're doing at that hospital?
I mean, I don't think Hamas is talking to anybody, but I will say this. I think a big mistake that's being made, and it goes back on what I was saying before. Hamas and the West talk different languages. To the West, a hospital is something that keeps people safe. To Hamas, a hospital is something that keeps them safe because they know that they can use the West's sensitivity to their own. They mock us for this. They laugh at us for this. They build 36 hospitals in Gaza. And I don't know if you've seen the size of Gaza, but it's not that big. 36 hospitals for what? Hamas speak a language of terrorism, and it is not the same language that the West speak. They cook babies. And if you can't imagine that, it's because you're not speaking the language. I think Israel is doing a very good job and trying very hard to act as an interpreter, to deal with Hamas on the level that they deserve to be dealt with, because this is not a hospital. This is an infrastructure that has been created under the pretense of a hospital, and to try and convey that in a way to the West, in a way that the West will understand it. But it's a struggle.
Ami, I give you the final word today.
Well, I find it really interesting, just from a zoomed out perspective, how obsessed the world is with the intricate details of every single step along the way that Israel has to defend itself. It does reveal this certain hyper fixation on this addiction, this fetish to scrutinize Israel and only Israel in defending itself. I mean, there are so many causes around the world, and it just always rubs me in this very curious way of like, it's amazing. Every military tactic that Israel's been implementing to defend itself gets scrutinized. And you have to ask yourself, why the one Jewish state that has to defend itself here, why does it get subject to the scrutiny? And then you can have a discussion on what's legitimate criticism and what's not. But just to the extent that people are hyper-fixating on every detail of the military campaign must beg the question of this double standard of why Israel gets this kind of attention, as opposed to any other conflicts around the world that don't get nearly as much. It makes the case for, you know, describing the anti-Zionism is certainly a mask for anti-Semitism. And I would just end on the idea that the one silver lining in all of this is that it's very hard to fight evil when it's obfuscated, when it's hidden behind fancy slogans and things like that. But now what we are seeing in the aftermath of October 7th is this gleeful, unapologetic mm-hmm. celebration of Hamas's actions, of Hamas's aims, from the river to the sea. There is only one solution, Intifada revolution. To the extent that the masses even understand what that means, the point is, it's clear as day what the motives are. The genocide of Jews and the destruction of the Jewish state, the only Jewish state in the world, the only state in the world that's not allowed to defend itself is the Jewish one, apparently. And this is clear as day being broadcast and celebrated. And this is what these movements stand for. So it's easier to fight evil when you can see it clearly. And that's the one silver lining takeaway from all of this. If you had any illusions about what all of this was about, it's here right in front of us.
From your mouth to Andrea Mitchell's ears, before I let you guys go, Meira, I just want to personally thank you publicly, because not only were you our tour guide in Israel, but you are a friend. You invited us into your home, and we met your family, and you shared your love of your country with us, and I think that's worth a public thank you. So thank you for that.
My family's going to be very happy when they see you said that.
There's no post-game show. I've got a thing, so we'll see you guys back here on Monday. Ciao. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast. And don't forget, you can watch my direct messages live on Blaze TV and YouTube every weekday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And of course, if you want to connect with me personally and get early access to my sit-down interviews, join RubenReport.locals.com.